Welcome to the TaxCast, the Tax Justice Network's monthly podcast. I'm Naomi Fowler. Coming up later, the trial begins of so-called LuxLeaks whistleblower Antoine Deltour. For us, several alarm bells are ringing over the state of our democracy. We'll skip the headlines this month and dive straight into the big story, the biggest offshore leak in history, the Panama Papers. Here to talk about that is the Tax Justice Network's John Christensen. Okay, John, well, there's really only one story to talk about this month, and we really seem to be living in a perpetual Yes, Prime Minister, House of Cards episodes. You know, let's set up some inquiries, let's have some meetings, let's announce some half-thought-out measures and avoid the real issues and solutions so that all the pressure can go away. Let's just put the solutions to one side. We know what they are. Let's get them out of the way, and then we can talk about what's really going on here. We know public registers of the real owners of offshore companies, offshore trusts and offshore foundations. We need countries to commit to automatic exchange of information on tax, and multinational companies must report on the real substance of their activities on a country-by-country basis. Nations must invest into their tax authorities and boost their capacity to regulate properly instead of running them into the ground. Canada's the rare exception that's put money where its mouth is. It's invested a few hundred million Canadian dollars, and it's anticipating reaping several billion in tax revenue. Let's dismiss pretty much all the talk we've had from the politicians so far, because we're going to waste our time here. Let's not be distracted by individual stories on politicians and other well-known people caught up in the Panama Papers, interesting though they are, because there really are much more important things going on, aren't there, including the opportunity for politicians in different countries to make a bit of a grab to increase their secrecy market share, which we'll talk about in a bit, whilst dressing up in transparency clothes. So it's all a bit alarming, actually. So we've had the resurrection of blacklists idea. They're completely political constructs. No one's ever going to blacklist the United States, for example, one of the world's biggest booming secrecy jurisdictions. If only we had some kind of way to measure these things, we'd know what these countries are doing.
Well, we already have a suitable way for deciding whether or not a jurisdiction is deliberately providing secrecy, deliberately standing in the way of international cooperation, and deliberately not complying with anti-money laundering legislation. And of course, that measure is the Financial Secrecy Index. And the great thing about the Financial Secrecy Index is it is not in any way guided by the politics here, which means that unlike the OECD's attempts to create blacklists in the past, we have no fear of including United States and Germany and other jurisdictions which have been clearly tailoring their laws and their compliance regimes in order to attract illicit flows. So the Financial Secrecy Index is the appropriate measure. It comes out of civil society. It's politically neutral in every way. And perhaps best of all, we produce it on an incredibly small budget. This is not an expensive measure, but it's a measure that's trusted. And one of the interesting things that's come out of the Panama leaks story is the extent to which the Financial Secrecy Index has provided journalists with much of the information they needed. For example, when they started to look at Panama, they looked to the Financial Secrecy Index report on Panama. When they started to look at BVI, for very good reason, because BVI is the real star of the Panama leaks story, our Financial Secrecy Index report on the British Virgin Islands was the report that everyone referred to. So here we have a ready-made process for ranking secrecy jurisdictions, looking at those which are most secretive. And of course, the ideal thing would be to extend the Financial Secrecy Index to cover all jurisdictions, because all jurisdictions are weak in some areas of their law, non-compliant in some areas, and non-cooperative.
Right. And the other thing that has come out of the Panama Papers, the OECD, once again, has really shown itself to be politically absolutely incapable, unable to take any meaningful action. No way now it can be justified not to let the UN tax body take over and actually do something meaningful here, is there?
The OECD has had a very bad time in the last few weeks, precisely because, rather embarrassingly for them, they've taken this very lax attitude. Just a matter of weeks before the Panama leaks came out, the OECD deemed Panama to be a cooperating jurisdiction. Well, that's kind of awkward, isn't it? But more importantly, the OECD has never, ever at any stage focused on the US issue. That is, the extent to which states like Delaware, Nevada, Wyoming, and others are highly secretive, highly aggressive in providing secrecy, and wholly unwilling to be compliant with anti-money laundering standards. So the OECD clearly isn't the appropriate body, and I think the Panama leaks has banged the last nail into their coffin. This opens the way for a new institutional framework. It has to come in under the auspices of the United Nations. It must bring in all the developing countries, because yet again we see that it's the elites of these countries, along with the elites of the richest countries, that are conspiring, let's use that word, to block progress towards a new 21st century regime, which will include comprehensive multilateral automatic information exchange, full disclosure of beneficial ownership, proper country-by-country reporting standards, which doesn't set the thresholds too high, etc., etc. The OECD, I'm afraid, has had its chance, has failed, and now we must move on.
Right, and it is important to stress that this is all about first world havens. I mean, a lot of attention's been on Panama. I've seen the term Panamania, when in actual fact, more than half of the jurisdictions of choice set up through Mossack Fonseca were actually UK havens. This is about first world haven destinations. This is about their desire to actually rig markets in their favour, something that they've been doing for a long time. There's a history with this, isn't there?
There's a very long history. For those who think that this is a relatively new phenomenon that's just began in the 1980s with financial market liberalisation, we need to look back to the 50s and the 1960s. And then you realise that actually the countries of the South, at that time they were called the non-aligned. They were neither aligned with the Soviet bloc nor with the Western bloc, the non-aligned movement. And people working within the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development were particularly concerned about this. They were looking at transparency measures. They were looking at the weak accounting reporting by multinational companies. They were looking at capital flows and they were wanting to take measures. There's one economist in particular, Raoul Prebisch, who was the first General Secretary of UNCTAD, United Nations Conference on Trade and Development, who was pushing very hard for a new international order which would include greater transparency and improved reporting, what we now call country-by-country reporting, by multinational companies. And guess what? They were blocked time and time again. In the case of Raoul Prebisch, he was actually ousted from UNCTAD because he had become inconvenient. Inconvenient to who? Well, guess what? It was the United States and United Kingdom and the big, powerful countries, the countries that politically are responsible for creating the tax haven empire. Look at Britain's record here, British Virgin Islands, which featured most prominently most of the companies that were registered by Mossack Fonseca were not registered in Panama. They were registered in the British Virgin Islands.
Right, and in a way it should have been called British Virgin Island Papers, not Panama Papers.
I quite agree. It is, of course, the BVI papers that we're talking about here. Or rather, it is the rich world empire. It is the United Kingdom, United States that are largely responsible for creating this global mess of tax havens and continue to block attempts to move against them. So there's a long history here, and at root, the United States and the United Kingdom have wanted to protect their tax havens because they have helped their multinational companies and their elites to invest in the markets of the South and not pay taxes on the profits that they're generating. So this was a way of giving the companies of the rich nations an unfair market advantage, which helped them to grab market share in the developing world and in the non-aligned countries.
Okay, and let's talk about where the spotlight hasn't gone, really. And as usual, we've got the big four accountancy firms who always manage to slip into the shadows with these things. And we should give a special mention to the many companies who must be breathing several sighs of relief that it was Mossack Fonseca that got hacked and not them, or that had their information leaked. The offshore magic circle. There is a certain element of pleasure, really, and finger pointing at those Panamanian people over there, how corrupt they really are, when actually the offshore magic circle, and look them up, it's quite interesting. The whole plethora of firms which are specialised in this business, and had they been hacked, it could have given us some very interesting information.
Yes, I mean, this is a rather uncomfortable part of the story, that we can poke fingers at Mossack Fonseca and at Panama and say it's all to do with this Central American country, a law firm based there, and of course they're going to be corrupt. But look at the offshore magic circle and you find a cast of law firms that are largely coming out of British jurisdictions, many of them from the Channel Islands, Morals, Ozans, Pearman's, Appleby, Bedell, Carrie Olson, all of these so-called offshore magic circle law firms are engaged in exactly the same kind of activities and will have been referring clients on to Mossack Fonseca precisely because they like to create a structure involving a Panamanian and a British Virgin Islands structure into their client structures precisely in order to ladder across many jurisdictions. So all of these law firms will be breathing a large sigh of relief because had they had a hack or a leak on this scale, exactly the same kind of activities would have been revealed. Mossack Fonseca's in the spotlight. But law firms, generally, they've been referring their clients to Mossack Fonseca for years. Of course, the big accounting firms have been referring their clients to Mossack Fonseca for decades, and the big banks as well. Now we need to start looking more closely at the role of enablers in setting up these structures and to start talking about what kind of sanctions we can take against the enablers. You know, is it right, for example, that any public procurement opportunity should be open to a law firm or an accounting firm or a bank which supports clients in tax avoiding and tax evading? The answer, of course, is no.
Right, and the Panama Papers, or the BVI Papers, represent quite an interesting opportunity for somebody like the British Prime Minister, David Cameron. He's got his anti-corruption summit coming along. He can actually use that to ensure the very lucrative UK trusts sector is protected while he's kind of dressing up in these transparency clothes, seemingly going on a crusade where he's actually, you could say, quite cynically pressuring other nations who are actually their commercial rivals when you think about it and saying, absolutely, banking secrecy is a terrible thing. You must clean up your jurisdictions. And that's actually going to create a kind of a wave, as we've been saying for a long time, that it's a good time to be working in trusts. Every single measure I've heard so far is leaving out trusts.
Yes, trusts are being left out of the discussions, and for good reason. In fact, the Financial Times, at the height of the Panama story, ran a story about how Prime Minister Cameron had been blocking attempts within the European Union to bring trusts into the frame. And why is he doing this? Well, if you look back over the last 10 years, at the last decade, we've seen enormous progress being made against banking secrecy. Traditional banking secrecy is largely eroded through information exchange processes. But no measures have been taken against trusts. And why is that important? Well, it's important because any offshore structure will typically now be based around an offshore company which will hold the assets or own the assets, and that company will belong wholly to an offshore trust or a foundation or some similar kind of legal arrangement. So it won't help anti-money laundering measures one iota. It won't help to deter tax evaders one little bit if they think that they can simply set up an offshore company which owns the assets and that offshore company belongs to a trust registered in Jersey or the Bermuda or the Cayman Islands or in any other British common law jurisdiction, including Singapore or Mauritius, because they'll be pretty damn confident that their information, that is their identity, will remain secure. So, yes, it does appear at the moment that the British Prime Minister is pushing to protect and enlarge the British trust industry at the expense of traditional banking secrecy arrangements. For that reason, we must ensure that there's absolutely no way that trusts can be used as a way of wriggling out of international information exchange processes.
Right, because politicians are not stupid. I would imagine that they know perfectly well that in the UK and the US, lawyers just don't use banks for secrecy. They've got trusts. Yeah, they use trusts.
Absolutely. I mean, the British legal system, and of course that extends to the United States, Canada, and most of the Anglo-Saxon legal world where common law applies, they are very familiar with the use of trusts. They have been setting up trusts on behalf of their clients for this purpose for over 100 years. There's a huge and lucrative fee-based industry. They're not just setting up the trusts, but administering the trusts, but acting as a trustee and so on. So for the law firms, this is happy days. They will be able to cash in unless whatever measures are taken at the international level include trusts.
Okay. We knew a lot of this stuff was going on. There's not the most enormous surprises so far. How do we make this, you know, a top three voting issue?
The important thing about the Panama leaks is not that it's revealed anything new, because I think many people knew about this, but it has revealed the scale, and it has revealed the scale to which the business elites, the political elites, are all in this together. This is a wake-up call for the rest of the world. If they want to protect our democracy, if we want to protect the rule of law, we must take action. We cannot rely upon our political elites to take the necessary action. The problem we have is if we wait a few years and then another similar scandal comes up, then the politicians and the business elites and so on will just say, oh, that was revealed years ago by the Panama leaks. Nothing new here, and the press won't cover it. So now is the moment to take action. And that means that civil society must take action. Civil society in the South in particular must now say to politicians of the North, you are the root of the problem. You are the cause of the corruption. I hope that politicians from the South will come to London to the summit in May and say to Prime Minister Cameron, you can do more than any politician on the planet to roll back on this corruption. It's your tax havens, the British Virgin Islands and the Channel Islands and Turks and Caicos and so on, that are right there at the core of the problem. They are the supply side of corruption. So now's the moment, and civil society, and of course that includes journalists who are the real heroes here. So, you know, this is a fantastic story of amazing cooperation between journalists across many, many countries, many, many newspapers. The Panama story provides the moment to take action and hold our politicians' feet to the fire.
And if there's one word you should look out for, it's trusts, trusts, trusts.
Yes, if we can secure agreement that trusts will be included in all of the disclosure arrangements, and that trustees, bear in mind most of these trustees are lawyers, will be required now to act as responsible citizens and will have a professional role in sharing information when they dispense or distribute any of the capital or the income from the trust, then we might start seeing progress. If we don't see that, politicians will claim all sorts of progress. But unless trusts are included, that progress will be mere window dressing.
John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network. Now it's time for the TaxCast special feature. We don't know who it was that let the Panama Papers scandal loose on the world. We do know they've said they wanted to make these crimes public and have warned that his or her life is in danger. It shows us yet again that those who leak information that's in the public interest need much better protection. Yet the move in most countries is in the opposite direction. This month, the TaxCast looks at how whistleblowers and even journalists who report on their information face becoming prisoners of conscience.
There is nothing in my past indicating that my ambition was to organise tax evasion in Europe. I was explaining to you.
This is Jean-Claude Juncker, former Prime Minister of Luxembourg and now President of the European Commission. He's busy here denying his central role in Luxembourg's rise as a tax haven with some very carefully chosen words.
I'm not the architect of what you could call the Luxembourgish model, because this Luxembourgish model doesn't exist in the full-fledged way people are indicating. You have to know But this is not an excuse, is it?
He's caught on the back foot here because of so-called Lux Leaks, where whistleblower Antoine Deltour made public secret tax deals between the tax haven of Luxembourg and hundreds of multinational companies. Many of these companies were able to operate almost tax-free in Europe. Billions were being lost in tax revenue at a time of savage cuts to public services that are still going on now. Antoine Deltour came across files with this information while he was working for the accountancy firm PricewaterhouseCoopers, and he decided it was his duty to leak it. Member of the European Parliament, Fabio De Masi.
There are very powerful people in the European Union who want to protect the interests of, for example, multinational corporations who need this kind of secrecy to engage in these dodgy tax deals. I think that this is really a slap in the face of the majority of the people who work so hard to make a living and pay taxes on every single cent they earn.
Antoine Deltour passed his information to journalist Edouard Perrin, who was the first to get it out into the media. Deltour's former employer, the accountancy firm PricewaterhouseCoopers, filed a complaint. And so now both of them and a third unidentified person face the public prosecutor in the Luxembourg courts. Their trial begins this month. Deltour faces years in jail and a huge fine.
This so-called LuxLeaks scandal has been extremely important in the debate on tax issues in Europe and in the world also.
Antonia Gambini of Human Rights Network, CNCD 111111.
After this LuxLeaks scandal, there has been a series of reforms. There has been a vigorous debate in the press, but also in the European Parliament. The European Parliament itself set up a special committee on this issue. And the European Commission proposed a new legislation on exchange of information between tax authorities on tax rulings. So we see that these revelations, this disclosure of a trade secret, has been very beneficial to the public and to the public debate.
And time will tell on the final results on that. But what has happened is that several secret arrangements between EU member states and multinational companies have been ruled as illegal state aid, distorting fair competition and breaking EU competition rules. It's just not how capitalism's supposed to work. And now some of those companies will have to repay billions in lost tax revenue.
The LuxLeaks affair really brought to the light something that many people have been expecting that had been going on for quite a long time, but in an order of magnitude that nobody was really prepared for.
This is Luc Dockendorf, Luxembourger and concerned citizen, now co-founder of a homegrown tax justice collective in a nation that really seems to need one.
It's a lovely country. I think there's around 120, 240 nationalities in Luxembourg. So it's in many ways, it's a diverse, affluent, peaceful, happy society. But then there's, of course, always those nagging questions. Where is the wealth really coming from? And is it a sustainable business model? And the wealth that we get, is it a zero-sum or a negative-sum game for people around the world? There can't be an argument that Luxembourg can't do anything else than finance, so we must continue, otherwise we'll starve, because it simply isn't true. And it will mean that we need to do some strategic investment in some sectors and perhaps also come to grips with the situation that, if we clean up the financial sector, then at the end of the day, there will be less money to go around. And that's not a very, very popular position for any elected politician to hold, or for any politician who wants to be re-elected. So what we want to do is make sure that the people who are in positions to effect change think of all of this, and that they see that there is a positive response in society to promises for more transparency and promises for economic diversification, and that the people who do have the capacities to either invest or plan ahead or build the generation of the future through training and education and higher education, that those people get into a position where they feel comfortable that the entire society is behind them. If Mr. Deltour or Mr. Perrin or the other person were to be found guilty and were to be either fined or incarcerated, that would certainly reflect very badly on Luxembourg.
Now, you'd think, after the storm that LuxLeaks created, that some EU nations at least would be happy about this extra tax revenue and they'd want to encourage whistleblowing of this kind, or at least protect whistleblowers of conscience better. But the EU's just gone in the opposite direction. Members of the European Parliament have voted by a majority to pass into law the so-called Trade Secrets Directive. Antonio Gambini.
Clearly, this directive is of major interest for a whole series of industrial lobbies, for a whole series of private interest groups. These businesses very much like secrets. They don't want people to know, for instance, if drugs that they are marketing or they are researching are dangerous for the public health. They don't want people to know whether their production is bad for the environment or for the climate. They don't want even less for people to know how and how much they manage avoiding taxes by very questionable legal constructions and by very questionable legal tricks, even though they are theoretically legal. So these businesses are now protected from the public scrutiny. They are now protected from any form of democratic control. They are protected from any form of transparency. So it is in the interest, definitely, of these private economic interests, but it is not in the interest of the general public, is not in the interest of democracy, is not in the interest of transparency.
Member of the European Parliament, Fabio De Masi.
There was a lot of corporate lobbying on this trade secret directive, and I passed on to the Parliament a message by Antoine Deltour, who's opposed to that directive, who said he would not have been protected under this directive. And people became a little bit nervous because now with the Panama leaks, this was not good public relations for them. And then they made all of kind of explanations why it would be important to vote this trade secret directive anyway. My stance is that trade secrets are sufficiently protected within the European Union. I don't doubt that there are like business innovations and things like that that should be protected for competitive reasons. There's no doubt about that. But the problem is that the Trade Secrets Directive basically defines as a trade secret wherever a corporation takes a measure to protect something. So if a corporation takes the measure to protect shady tax deals, this would be considered a trade secret, and this is unacceptable.
Antonio Gambini.
If the real objective of the directive was to protect companies against unfair competition, the solution for that would have been to have a directive that would have targeted as illegal behavior the economic or commercial exploitation of such illegally acquired trade secret. This is not the case. Nowhere in the directive is it required that this is about, you know, economic or commercial exploitation of trade secrets. The other problem is that you give to companies a legal tool that they can use to harass people. Obviously, companies are very rich, so it's for them it's quite easy to hire lawyers, to press charges, and to try to silence people who are trying to reveal secrets or small media outlets that are trying to publish relevant information, even if those secrets should be in the public domain, but because they do impact significantly people's life. We are talking about LuxLeaks, but recently there has been a new massive leak of information in the financial transparency and tax field. I'm talking about the Panama Papers. With this directive, such very useful leaks and the disclosure of so much interesting data will be much more difficult in the future.
And it's important to remember, too, that so much of this really worthwhile information in the public interest has come not from brave politicians, regulators or law enforcement bodies. Fabio De Masi.
These were courageous young men like Antoine Deltour who lost everything. They are threatened with a prison. They usually lose their jobs. They lose the source of their income. And hence, I think it is the moral duty of the European Union to protect those who help us to get the money back that corporations and very rich individuals have stolen from the public. If we were to expose more of these practices, there would be tremendous pressure to change the rules of the game. So, for example, to enact policies that would not allow any more multinational corporations to play member states against each other, competing for the lowest effective tax rates, and so on. And I think there are a lot of people in the European Union who don't want that. And we know from the Panama leaks that even some leading EU politicians stashed away money in offshore funds. So they have legitimate reasons to be concerned, but I think they actually not serving the public interest.
So what would you like to see happen now?
Well, I think 3 points. First of all, we need some independent body whistleblowers may turn to. So a lot of whistleblowers try at first to lobby their own corporation, their own employer, for greater transparency and for compliance with the law. But very often they make the experience, such as Rudi Elmer, former Julius Baer banker on the Cayman Islands, when he basically approached the bank and later he even approached the Swiss authorities. The only thing that happened was that they did not want to accept his information, and then they sent private detectives after him. The Swiss authorities apparently even informed the bank about him complaining. And this is really governments conspiring even in criminal activity. And hence, I think that it is very important that there's some kind of independent body people can turn to improve compliance. Secondly, I think they need some kind of financial and even psychological forms of support to prepare themselves. And this is not only about, you know, like people like former bankers. This is also about very standard employees, workers who might detect something at their workplace. So it's about all of us. And thirdly, I think there must be legal protection that if a whistleblower can legitimately assume that what he exposes is in the higher public interest, they must be protected. At first glance, they can very often not judge whether the information they expose is about legal or illegal behavior. We have a hugely staffed European Commission who takes years to even decide whether, for example, the LuxLeaks really involved illegal state aid and all these kind of things. So how can an individual person who's not a trained lawyer or anything know from the beginning? So I think that if they can sufficiently prove that what they expose is in the higher public interest, it protects, for example, the financial interests of the union, then they should be protected.
And we shouldn't forget the accountancy firms either, who've enabled these tax deals, who are making so much money out of all this. They always seem to slip into the shadows, don't they?
This is, for me, a public issue. And if these kind of deals were published, the role that the Big Four would play in them would become very transparent. And then we would also know where, for example, PricewaterhouseCoopers or anybody else would have engaged in a deal. And we could also make more transparent their pricing methods, for example, because there are some rumors that they might have even charged commission fees, in the sense that the greater the tax savings they organized for these multinational corporations, the more money they got from their clients. And if such deals existed and we were not able to prove until now, then this would be really, really outrageous.
The trial of Antoine Deltour, journalist Edouard Perrin, and a third person begins on the 26th of April. If you'd like to thank them for their public service and show your support, please go to www.support-antoine.org. You can find out also about Luxembourg's homegrown Tax Justice Collective on www.taxjustice.lu. You've been listening to the Taxcast from the Tax Justice Network. We'll be back next month.